You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not to cover a newsbeat. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. They wanting my cake and eat it too. They wanting it both ways. Fame made me a balloon, cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. But it was confusing, cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee of Bruce Lee Abuse Inc. Use it as a tool when I blew steam. Hit the lottery, ooh wee. But with what I gave up to get, it was bittersweet. It's like winning, and use me. I'm blinded cause I think I'm getting so huge, I need a strength.
You know, good morning. I just saw a picture of Hillary Clinton and what's her like right hand girl's name? Huma, that girl. Kind of interesting that two women so prominent both have husbands that are just running the streets, man. Bill Clinton off the leash. Andrew Weiner, come on now. Right? To the point of being charged for soliciting with somebody under the age of 18. Huh? Is that a trend? It kind of appears. It's just odd, right? Women that are extremely powerful just have their stuff all over the place. Anyway, good morning to you. Let me tell you what we're going to do today. Kind of busy, so I can't be screwing around today. Well, I could be, but I'm not supposed to. So what are we doing today? We're going to talk to Grant Newsham's going to call me in 11 minutes. All right, that's the plan. So Newsham standing by. Then after that, Lieutenant General Rusty Blackman's going to join us. He's the president and CEO of the Marine Corps Foundation. So we're going to talk a little leadership with the general, and then we're going to also talk about what's new at the Marine Corps Foundation. They are an incredible group. Okay, the National Museum of the Marine Corps, hello, and they're going to do some big stuff this year. So we're going to talk to Rusty Blackman, catch up with them, what they have going. And then I got a call from a buddy yesterday who took issue with the discussion about the Hilo Dunker training. And he made an interesting point. He said, should we train for the least likely event? How much effort do we put in to training for the least likely event? What is the probability that a helo's going in the water? Grant is calling me now, but I'm not ready for him. Hold on, let's find out. Grant.
Yeah, I am. So this is better than yesterday.
It is. You're 10 minutes early. Can you call me back in 10 minutes?
Okay, just wanted to make sure it was working.
No.
Okay, I'm not sure how, if you could hang up on me, that might be best. I'm not sure how I stop a call. Let me try.
Okay. No.
Okay, I'll try in a bit. Okay.
Yeah, 10 minutes. Exactly. 9 minutes now. Okay, so I'm going to hang up.
Okay.
9 minutes. 8 minutes and 45 seconds.
Got it. Okay. Out here.
It worked. Okay. Grant's in Japan, hence the difficulties. Normally he's in Hawaii or the continental United States. Anyway, so back to my discussion. Do we train to that, and how much effort do we have to do? Everybody in the MU got to go through the Hilo Dunker. Yes? I said no. Everybody got to go through every high-speed shooting drill? No. Who should go through the high-speed shooting drills? Well, the people that are most likely to execute those drills. Everybody got to go through those? No. Every Marine rifleman? Yeah. Every Marine and infantryman? No. Most Marines aren't even riflemen, honestly. Okay, so in light of that, what's the probability that you're going to go in the water in a helicopter? Who should get helo dunker training? My response was, I think if you're involved in the helo company, if you're one of those guys in that company, if you're an FO that supports them, if you're liable to get on those helos on a regular basis, if that's your job, you ought to get that training. Everybody else, you might get lifted like that. Yeah. Pay attention. Now, here's the other thing I said. So Will Cosentini's going to join Mike and I today, and we're going to talk about that. Mike could only be with us for 30 minutes because he's going to get his Botox injections in his head that he might live stream. If he live streams it, then we may listen to him for a few minutes. Yeah. There you go. The Gunner, he live streams. Yeah. You should make friends with him on Facebook, so you'll get updates when you'll get notified when he's live streaming. Then you can hop on like I always do. So we're gonna talk about that. What is the probability? I got an email that I posted to the website two things that I posted to the website. One was Rob Schwarz, who's also known as Montana Man. He found the video of the 46 going in the water and driving in 1987 that I was describing yesterday. Yeah, it's between the Ranger, and I want to say, I don't know if that's the Haciampa, but the Haciampa was always hanging out with us. I don't know if the Haciampa was a refueler. Might have been. In that case, never mind. But anyway, so it shows it going in the water between the Ranger and the ship that was vert repping us. And you see him driving it in the water and then tipping it on its side and hopping out. Yeah. So Schwarz sends me that. I throw that on the website. Go to the podcast page. Then a guy who was in a crash by the name of Patrick Melton sent me an email about the program yesterday. And he crashed in a 53 off Norway in 1986. Will Cosentini, who's going to be on in the third hour, was part of 1-6 at that time. So it's kind of this circular little thing yesterday. He said they lost 8 out of 21 on the helicopter that he was in. The helicopter broke into 5 pieces. So I would offer you that as well to take a look at. But he said the violence of the experience is incredible, the suddenness and the violence of it. And, you know, and Will made the point that, you know, in listening to people talk, it seemed, I mean, it does. I mean, it's an act, it's luck. It's like getting hit or not getting hit in combat. More luck than we care to admit. So, that's what we're going to talk about today. So, nice little mix. The United States Marine Corps Band says good morning. Good morning.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
Right before Grant Newsham calls. Mostly sunny in 76 in Quantico. Cloudy in 77 at Camp Lejeune. Mostly sunny in 81 in Granbury, Texas. 55 degrees, all the way down to 55 in Montana, and sunny. 29 Palms, sunny in 77. 77 in 29 Palms in August, that's good. It means you're probably going to see less than 100.
Whoa.
Camp Pendleton, cloudy in 59. Camp Smith in Hawaii, start cloudy, 78 degrees. Okinawa, dark cloudy, 85. Right on time. And in Raqqa, it's 106 degrees, so it's cooled off a little bit. In Syria, at the home of All Marine Radio, 68, headed for 82. Joining us once again is the one and only Grant Newsham, capable of solving communication issues. So, Grant, first of all, well done, my friend.
Comms officer. It took me 36 hours to fix it.
Nobody said you were under duress to fix it, but nonetheless, well done. Well done. We always appreciate having you on. First of all, tell everybody, we always do Where's Waldo with you. So where in the world are you right now?
I'm in Kobe, Japan, which is just down near Osaka.
Chiefly known for Kobe beef, yes?
As much as the headquarters of the Yamaguchi Gumi, Japan's main Yakuza group, and for Kobe beef as well.
What group is that? I don't know. Forgive me for my ignorance.
That's okay. It's called Yamaguchi Gumi. It's sort of the Microsoft of Japanese organized crime. Or one guy refers to it as Goldman Sachs with guns. It's by far Japan's most dominant underworld group.
Oh, but you. So, and what are you doing there?
Nothing related to them this time. But I'm just doing some sort of business advising for a friend, is all.
Got it. All right. All right, Grant, a retired colonel in the United States Marine Corps, comes on the program on a regular basis and makes us smart about North Korea. So, where do you want to start? First of all, let's update the going in premises. China will not, of its own volition, be of any assistance to the United States. Tell me what's changed in that, if anything.
I would say nothing. I think what's changed a little bit, and this is just temporary, is that the United Nations passed some sanctions just the other day, and China voted in favor of the sanctions. So you will find a portion of the sort of the foreign affairs commentariat in the United States thinking that, well, this time China's really serious. But no, what you'll find is after a while that China has not done anything really to enforce the sanctions and, as usual, is not helping out. Additionally, the sanctions themselves, even if enforced as written, which is not going to happen, but even if they were, it's really just a pinprick in terms of what's needed. So we're still very much where we were in terms of applying economic pressure on North Korea. What this does, of course, is it forces the Trump administration to wait, to give the sanctions some time to fail, basically. So China has, in a way, succeeded in kicking the can down the road a bit, in either intentionally or unintentionally, to give Kim more time to develop his nuclear weapons and his missiles.
what about the notion that this focuses attention on China and their role in either facilitating the development of nuclear weapons and or facilitating the development of nuclear-tipped intercontinental ballistic missiles, or being on the side of the international community and helping to defuse this? Do you give any weight that that at some point will affect China's policies?
No, I really don't. It'd be nice to think it might, but I don't see any evidence of that. Chinese involvement in propping up the North Korean regime and also providing both financial support to the missile nuclear development effort. But there's also a long history of Chinese cooperation and involvement in the actual development program themselves. When you've got North Korean engineers working in Chinese nuclear facilities, well, that should give you some idea of what's been going on. This has been pretty well known for at least the last 25 years, and given that nobody has ever made an issue of that, it's hard to think that why just now it's going to matter much. Additionally, one notices that China doesn't really care much about criticism or even its reputation. It would be nice to be beloved or thought highly of, but ultimately what China is interested in is actual concrete benefits or concrete advantages. And you look at what they've done in the South China Sea, which has been criticized fairly widely throughout the world, and it really doesn't matter to the Chinese. And so I'm not convinced that reputational harm or fear of embarrassment really has much effect on the Chinese Communist Party and its leadership. So, once again, you can see I'm both pretty pessimistic, but also pretty cynical about it. And we've actually seen things like this in the past, so why exactly this will be different is not clear. I think one thing that
let me tell you why it'll be different. Okay, and this is Mac the Optimist. Okay, and this is no basis in reality, but it's just me being irrationally optimistic.
Okay,
the UN's involved now, Grant. Okay. The UN involved and the community of nations is now looking at this issue, and dare I say, looked at the issue of Iraq, and is now focusing its attention on that. And when we get really serious, it seems, is when the United States goes down this road to the United Nations and presents its case, and so this is our last best hope at avoiding military confrontation. Once we got on the far side of this, where the United Nations has attempted and failed, it seems like historically, at least in recent history, that is when the United States commences the movement of assets that will be used in a confrontation. So I'm holding out hope that as the world community and the United Nations focuses its spotlight on this issue, but there can be some other solution other than a military confrontation.
That'd be nice. I hope it happens. But once again, I don't think that the latest effort by the United Nations is going to pressure China enough and force them to really tighten the screws on North Korea to really cause North Korea to cease and desist. That assumes that the Kim regime would, in fact, cease and desist, even if the screws were put on them. I just don't quite see that happening. I think whether America goes to war with North Korea perhaps is a different matter. But in terms of China really doing something different than it's already done, I just don't see that happening. And China will always, can of course claim, well, it's done, it did it enforce the sanctions as described in the UN resolutions. And even if somehow magically they did all that, North Korea would still be getting enough money from the exports which are permitted, but also this worldwide money-making scheme of the Kims. that rakes in all the money the regime needs to survive and even do more than just survive. So I don't think the sanctions themselves are enough to really to have any effect. And if China, even if China were to seriously enforce them as it's supposed to, so I just don't see what it is that is going to stop this this steady drift towards some real trouble down the road. That's, you know, my take.
On that positive note, I have an email question for you. And just came in, so let me get to it. Matt Grant just said that they have all the money they need to prop themselves up. Could he explain where that money is coming from? Is that the foreign worker program that they have that I've read about? Where are they getting their money from?
Yes, that would be. That's a big part of it. Is the foreign worker program? They probably got 50 to 100,000 North Koreans at least working in various industries around the world, from mining to timber, running restaurants, and even running sort of like hotels here and there. And it brings in a fair amount of money. Additionally, and a regime like this doesn't need a whole lot when you can put 90% of your population on quarter rations. You don't need a whole lot, but that brings in a lot. And then you have a lot of illicit activities, drug smuggling, drug dealing, counterfeit cigarette exports and sales. And they actually do, I think you'd almost say fairly, one doesn't want to use the word fairly well, but for a regime like that that is supposedly isolated from the world, they do actually manage to produce enough money to keep themselves in business. And this just inexplicably has been allowed to continue for decades now. So they seem to do, you know, unfortunately, they seem to do okay. And you look at, for example, in North Korea, you have luxury products, you have luxury automobiles. These come from somewhere. And you do have to buy them. So that's just sort of a concrete evidence of, you know, the fact that they're not the ruling, the Kim ruling elite, and that clique is not suffering as one might think.
You know what? You are extremely pessimistic today, but you've never held out any hope that China would participate in any of this. Next question. Could you discuss the drug smuggling and the counterfeit cigarette thing? I think we all understand, but the drug smuggling, what does that entail? And explain that to us.
A lot of that, it involves what you call, it's in Japanese, kakusezai, stimulants. And you find that a lot of it has been is produced in North Korea, and a lot of it in China. There's a North Korean connection to it, and it's not as if the Chinese don't know about it. And then that it gets smuggled throughout Asia. And a lot of this, the movement comes via China, comes via North Korea, it even comes via South Korean ports as well. And some of this finds its way into Japan, the Philippines. There's a connection as well. So it's principally, as I understand it, is the methamphetamines that are manufactured. And once again, it does come out of North Korea. But there is a definite Chinese connection to that, both in the movement and the manufacture of it. And even some of that North Korean stuff winds up in Japan, via various routes, usually South Korea, the Philippines, or even via Taiwan. And the Japanese Yakuza, for example, since I'm in the hometown of the main gang, about half of them, perhaps, are of Korean origin. And they do have pretty good contacts, certainly with South Korea and also with North Korea as well. So if you can sort of backtrack and see things with enough of an X-ray vision,
right,
you will actually find a Japanese Yakuza connection up to North Korea. as well. So that's just one part of it that I used to be more familiar with, but I know it continues to this day.
So when people ask the question, how does this regime prop itself up financially? That would be the relatively short answer to it.
That's one of it. It is all, there's the illicit activities, and then there are these activities that they're allowed to do. And once again, you know, when you've got North Korean workers, until fairly recently, working in garment factories in Poland and sending their wages back, that gives you some idea of just how widespread and in some ways quiet this activity is. And I'd suggest that the United States has never done what it needs to do to crack down on this. The activities are very easy to spot and to find, but it's also really a number of very normal countries that allow this to happen for some inexplicable reason. When North Korea's got it's got far more embassies in countries than Taiwan is allowed to have. But it's got a lot of embassies around the world, which is surprising when you consider that all one hears about is that sanctions are being applied. North Korea is being isolated, and yet it's allowed to have operations. I recall this was a good decade ago, being in Geneva and out for an afternoon with some friends, and they pointed out, this is down by the lake at a big cafe, that they pointed out the North Koreans, and they were some sort of grim, fierce-looking people who were out sitting at the cafe drinking something, I think. And then they pointed out the Swiss plainclothes police officers that you could see in the sort of stationed in the crowd around them in a rectangle of sorts. So this is in Geneva. Once again, you just find the North Koreans in all sorts of places where you wouldn't normally think. Even Taiwan, Singapore, Malaysia, all these things have gotten a little bit more attention in recent times, but just a little bit more.
My guest, the retired Marine Colonel Grant Newsham, we're talking about Asia-Pacific issues. Chief among those these days is North Korea. Next thing I want to talk about, Grant, is the whole rhetoric. Are you surprised at anything that you've heard? The president, I think, tried to come up with his own little sexy shock and awe term. I don't know if those fire and fury has any special connotation in the Korean language. And then the Secretary of Defense weighed in and said essentially that we would annihilate North Korea yesterday. Oddly enough, the president took much more grief for his statement about fire and fury than the Secretary of Defense did about him saying that we would annihilate North Korea, which I found humorous. I think it obviously goes to the credibility of the source. Not too many people mess with the SecDef. Everybody seems to take a run at the president. The rhetoric. Is it just a rhetorical dance, keeping this issue out in front of everybody, North Korea beating its chest as it continues to march down this road towards having a nuclear-tipped ICBM?
I think North Korea has always produced this exact kind of language going back decades. It's really identical in its ferocity and it's almost Victorian-flavored vituperation or just this kind of language. But they've never had the ability to actually do something about it, which is different. In terms of what the president said the other day, I thought that what General Mattis said was equally harsh. It was equally strident. He just used slightly different language, and also it was General Mattis or Secretary of Defense Mattis saying it. But what Mr. Trump said, that's, you know, it was, you know, perhaps not what Teddy Roosevelt would have said. But that said, I didn't think it was that outrageous at all. And I would suspect he didn't even think up that language. I suspect he was reading from a prepared statement. And I don't think that he's the one who wrote it up. And it could quite possibly be that his national security advisors gave it the okay. And at the end of the day, I don't think anyone's even going to remember the statement a day or two from now. I think something else is going to happen. And it's really not much of an issue, to my way of thinking, other than the fact that President Trump said it.
Got it. All right. Talk to us about real-world events on the Koreans, on the North Korean side. And has there been any watershed event as they continue to conduct tests and make statements? So is there anything that's been watershed-like that we should be concerned about that's gone on in the last 2 weeks?
That latest ICBM test got a lot of publicity and a lot of attention from the press and the commentators. But to my way of thinking, at least, that really is just the latest step in a what is ultimately an engineering problem for the North Koreans. And through trial and error, they will get where they need to get where they want to go. And they've said what they're going to do, and they're going to try to do it unless stopped. Mr. Kim saw what happened to Gaddafi and saw what happened to Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, so here's a question for you relative to that, because I mused about that yesterday in your absence, in our comm issue, your absence. I kind of made light of, you know, being a dictator, that's not an easy gig to get on the planet. There's a finite number of dictatorship gigs on the planet. I was surprised that Uday and Kuse did not go to their dad and say, "Hey, Dad, they're loading tanks like in ports along the American coast. We saw videos of that. We don't need to risk a franchise for this, okay? Why don't we let the UN inspectors and dial this back?" You know, and Kim Jong-un seems crazier than either Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein. I'd be curious about your analysis of that as an intel guy. It would seem to me that you would dial it back to walk it to the brink, dial it back, you know, blah, 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 and then continue to progress and lie and do the things that people do. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, you'd kind of think so, that he would go about it a little more quietly. So I don't know if the, you know, if the Koreans are like the Irish of Asia. Maybe they can't help themselves. I couldn't resist.
Easy with that Irish nonsense.
Yeah, but there's, you know, there's something about it that he just can't keep his mouth shut, and they never have actually. This, you know, really goes back a long time. But I think that, you know, he sees this as his guarantee of survival, and he's so close to it that if he can get across that line, he's safe, is how he would see it. And ultimately, there is I believe that the Kim family's objective is to reunify the peninsula and not under South Korean control. It may take a number of moves to get to that point where they can cause the U.S. to pull back or relax its or reduce its commitment and somehow get an opening. But I think that is where they intend to go with that. But this is the guarantee of his survival if they can get that. And they are so close, which brings what I think to me, it brings up to mind what I think is the maybe the most significant event of the last few days was the at least some part of the U.S. intelligence community indicating that the North has miniaturized nuclear weapons to the point that they can fit onto the tips of missiles. And it's that seems to have caught a lot of people by surprise because it's always been said, well, they're a few years or years away from actually miniaturizing something. Yeah, they can blow up something in the ground, but to go that far that quick, or to have the intelligence community or some part of it reckon that they've reached that point, that was, to me, that was a pretty big, that was the maybe the biggest surprise of the last few days. Of course, if a missile lands in offshore off of Guam in the next few weeks or so, that will be a big deal too.
All right, I have to take a quick break. Can you hold on? And then I want I want to talk about that. So what Grant alluded to is this proclamation that they will target areas around Guam with 4 intercontinental ballistic missiles, and they are looking at conducting that kind of a shoot. So we're going to take a quick break. More next on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsouthfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Here on the west coast of the United States. Grant Newsham in Japan. We continue here. And Grant, what time is it in Japan?
Oh, I guess it's coming up on midnight or so.
All right. Midnight tomorrow? Or midnight today for
yes.
us?
I think it's still today.
Shortly tomorrow. Shortly tomorrow. Let's talk about this test. And now let's play a little bit of action, reaction, counteraction. Let's just say for the purpose... first of all, let me lay the groundwork. Intercontinental ballistic missile tests, as I know them, get shot into the air, and you either shoot them or land them in your own territory, or they splash someplace. They don't normally splash near the intended target for, I think, obvious reasons. What do you make of the announcement of this test? And is my understanding of intercontinental ballistic missile testing, is that accurate?
Oh, goodness. So I'm not the last word on ICBM tests, but I think you do generally try to have it land somewhere where it's not going to frighten anybody. If will Kim do this, I have no idea. He's done things that a lot of people didn't think he would do. He's done that in the past. Nobody can really rule this out, but I would suggest that if he does, that it suddenly become a very different world for us. It's one thing when the North Koreans do missile tests and they land, say, in Japanese waters, because that's a long way away from the United States, and it's some other country's problem. And we tend to tell people when things like that happen to them to calm down, the way we did with the South Koreans when the North Koreans fired artillery on a South Korean island, when they sunk that South Korean Navy ship. The Americans leaned heavily on the South Koreans to not respond. And with the Japanese, I don't think we've quite understood just how much it bothers them have missiles go over their territory and to land into the ocean, which is not all that far from Japan. But when it happens to us, I think we're going to see things very differently. And also that would be just by any measure, this would be the equivalent of, say, a 98-pound weakling poking a really strong guy in the eye, like twice. This, I think, would mandate a U.S. response, and that one can speculate on what that might be. It actually might be military response, or it might be the Americans finally putting on complete sanctions on North Korea, effectively a blockade, not just a seaborne blockade, but really an economic blockade, and that would entail also going after every Chinese company that does business with North Korea, and even ones that don't, in order to really get the point across. And that would be your, I think, of the options. That would be one of them. The other, of course, is military action. The other one is just gritting our teeth and living with it, and that's hard to imagine. So this is going to get pretty interesting. And if the North actually does shoot a missile off that comes close to U.S. territory, there's going to be a response, I would think. And I wouldn't be surprised if we tried to shoot it down. But nonetheless, the fact that there was a missile headed our way That hasn't happened a whole lot in the past, so this would be something very different.
That's what I was going to say. Would it surprise you if the United States chose to intercept that? So do you want to send a message? Well, here's one right back at you. Just know that with the intent being you don't have that many of them. We know that. The few that you can send, we will shoot down, and then we will, to quote the Secretary of Defense, we will end your regime and your nation. Is that the message? And North Koreans seem to be, they seem to poke the bear and very much like a page out of China's book, they allow the blustering and then they just continue to do it. But as you said, this is different for the United States. And I think it is. I can imagine the Japanese kind of chuckling when I saw this, like, oh, now we're going to see how you like it.
I wouldn't blame them. But you could look back from the North perspective. One might suggest that they look at everything they've done, and just go back to when they blew up a good chunk of the South Korean cabinet in Burma back in the 80s, and everything they've done, and really nothing's happened to them. They've pretty much gotten away with everything. They get Jimmy Carter coming later on. To reenact Neville Chamberlain of the 30s. You get Madeleine Albright coming and fawning over the previous Kim. And really, what has been the recompense for the provocations they have done? At some point, you may think that, well, the Americans won't do anything, nor will anyone else. Even the Chinese I've got a feeling that they don't, and you do hear this from certain Chinese quarters, going back a few years now, is that, quote, the Americans won't do anything, unquote. And so this is what comes of 25 years of a bipartisan effort, it seems, to allow the North to develop these weapons. I'm half joking about that last bit. But what we've tried hasn't worked, and it's gotten us to where we are today.
All right. So if they're saying it, there's not too many things they have said and not done. I mean, to me, they've been fairly consistent in what they've said and what they've done. So we will watch as they launch something in the direction of Guam, and we will see the American response. Email. Mac, listening to Grant is always illuminating and depressing because he seems to be the voice in the room that is most consistent and most real, while other people cling to these asinine hopes that have historically proved to be fruitless for some reason that I don't actually understand. If I could ask the over-the-horizon question today, what happens next? Is there any amount of pressure from the UN that moves China? Is there any amount of economic pressure that moves China? Or will China blackmail its neighbors, saying, if you take any action against us now, that we will punish you by excluding you from our markets? And then relative to North Korea, what does he see as the next phase of this after the Guam test? All right, so China and North Korea, what do you see as the next? And start with the UN piece. Is there any amount of pressure that the UN can put on China that will have an impact on its policy?
Well, the UN never will, obviously, because China is on the Security Council, permanent members, so they can veto anything. So you've seen how the Americans have actually backed off on putting sanctions on Chinese entities because they wanted to get the Chinese to agree to UN sanctions against North Korea. It could be that the U.S. is playing chess here and actually setting China up for something later down the road, but I just don't see the United Nations ever putting enough pressure on China or on North Korea which would be ultimately be in that case would be dependent on Chinese cooperation. I just don't see that happening. Is it theoretically possible? Yes, it is, but I'd say it's extremely unlikely, which leaves the option of the Americans unilaterally applying pressure on China. And once again, that is doable. I think if you had really the right approach and the right amount of nerve on the U.S. side. Do I think that's going to happen? I wish it would, but I wouldn't bet too much money on it. Because we can usually think up a lot of reasons why we won't do something, because we think it's just too hard or China's too big. And that China has its advocates on the U.S. side who will make China's case for them, saying that, well, China's doing everything it can. So I don't think that's going to happen. I wish they would get sanctions, would get applied seriously, but I really don't think that's going to happen. In terms of what North Korea does, it's not certain that they are going to launch any missiles towards Guam. They said they are, but that doesn't mean they do. If they do, then I think there will have to be a very serious U.S. response on China, and maybe even on North Korea as well. But I think, as I've said before, I think this is just going to get worse and worse by degree as the North improves its capabilities getting better nuclear weapons that fit on better missiles and that can hit anything they shoot them at. And there's also, indications as well of advances in the North with submarine-launched missiles as well. It appears that we can do a pretty good job of spotting South Korean submarines or North Korean subs from what I read. But I just see this getting increasingly difficult. And at some point, and I think we just might be close to it, that the U.S. is going to have to make a decision to either live with it, as we do with are going to with the Iranians, or to do something about it. I don't know if in baseball terms we've kind of got the bottom of the eighth and we're down by seven or so. It's hard to get out of this, get out of it easily. I have noted recently in recent times there's a tendency to blame Donald Trump for everything here. yet. This is, using a baseball analogy, it's if you brought in a reliever in the eighth inning, you're down by seven, the bases are loaded, and say he gives up a double. And then everyone's telling him he's a horrible pitcher and he's lost the game. Well, I would suggest that everyone who was pitching before that set things up for him. So he's got a tough, hand to play here. We'll see how it goes. But I'm just, I'd like to be optimistic. But I don't see it, though you can take heart, because, as I've said, I always predict Redskins Super Bowl victories, so maybe I'm wrong about this one, too.
Well, to date, you have yet to be wrong, because your pessimism is grounded in the performance of China, in the performance of North Korea, who, in my opinion, have been consistent in their ignoring whatever the United States has to say and doing what they please, knowing that the United States will protest vehemently and then just get on and live with it. And so one more email and I will let you go. Matt, could Grant speak to the reason why these weapons are so important? Is it the guarantor of the regime, much like the proliferation of weapons post-Korean War, almost a conventional deterrent that could hit with the scope of a nuclear weapon, was a means of prohibiting a future conflict, in a way guaranteeing mutual assured destruction through conventional ordnance by the number of gun positions, rocket positions, and all those different units that are arrayed to impact Seoul and the surrounding area. They did that post-Korean War to guarantee, at least that's my way of looking at it. Is this simply the march of time and them progressing to, in their minds, guarantee the franchise. So is that what this is, Grant?
I think so. It's really a way for what amounts to a criminal gang, and the North Korean regime does resemble an organized crime group. It gives them a way to guarantee their survival. And really, ultimately, it comes down, I think, to the one country that they're really worried about is the United States. And this gives them the option of raising those doubts in U.S. minds that if America does something, that it just might lose Los Angeles or a good chunk of it. And you somehow slips a missile, the North slips a missile through whatever defenses we have. They just got to get lucky once. And this, it's that threat which is paralyzing, potentially, because the thought of it is one that does tend to cause policymakers in the U.S. side to freeze. You know, if even the possibility of losing, you know, a good chunk of Seoul through conventional means has caused the Americans to restrain themselves, the possibility of losing a U.S. city or suffering the kinds of damages you would suffer from a sort of a nuclear strike on an American city, from a North Korean perspective, that is what you need to keep the police at bay. And once you've done that, then you are able to intimidate people closer to home and, you know, make some progress towards your objective of reunifying the peninsula under North Korean control. And in all of this, you've got the Chinese who, I think the analogy of this nutty guy in a trailer park who's got a pit bull that he lets run loose once in a while just because he likes to scare people and have people afraid of him, that I think the Chinese don't really mind the idea of a nuclear-armed North Korea, because for whatever reason they believe the North will never shoot it at them. But I think the emailer's assessment, it makes sense to me. If I was the North Koreans, I'd probably do the same thing.
All right. Well, I guess the biggest question mark in all of this is the American response, yes?
I think so. It's there's really no if to stop this, there's really no half measures that are available or that are going to work. You know, right. One might try them, but they're not going to work. It's really sanctions of a kind that have never been seen before. Not even like was used against Rhodesia. But it really has to strangle the North with the unspoken objective of bringing down the regime. But only those kinds of sanctions would work. Or you have a military option, and I hope that nobody is thinking that will be short or easy.
Grant Newsham on a Thursday. Sir, first of all, thanks for solving the comm issue. And always depressing to speak with you. But
I'm glad I could help.
But nonetheless, it gives us a more real picture of what the nation faces and the critical decisions that will lie ahead for Donald Trump. So,
yes.
Grant, travel safe. Thank you for doing this, and I know we'll talk to you in the not-too-distant future.
Okay, thanks very much.
You bet. That is Grant Newsham here on a Thursday edition of on the All Warrior Radio Network. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more. Don't touch that dial.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.